This is a HeadGum Original.
A lot of this podcast is me talking through things that happened a long time ago. Things that took me quite a while to come to terms with on my own. And maybe it would have been healthier if I had talked to somebody back when it was all happening. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp, which can connect you with a licensed professional therapist based on your specific personal needs. It's safe, it's convenient, it's online. You can start communicating in less than 24 hours. And it's not self-help, it's professional counseling. BetterHelp will make sure you find the therapist who is right for you. And they make it easy and free to change counselors if you need to, until you find the one you're happy with. It's more affordable than traditional offline, in-person counseling. Financial aid is available. You can send a message to your counselor anytime, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, all without ever having to go to a physical office and sit in a waiting room. And because BetterHelp isn't limited by geography, there's a broad range of expertise available, a lot more than you might have access to wherever you're currently living. Licensed professional counselors who are specialized in depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief, self-esteem. Anything you share is confidential, of course. You can check out the testimonials posted daily on their site. Start living a happier life today. Listeners of this podcast get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/deadeyes. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/deadeyes.
That is fascinating. I can't believe you had to travel all the way there, re-audition, and then fly home. I mean, that's like brutal. So then did you have to buy a ticket for yourself?
Well, I lived in England at the time.
Wait, why were you living in England? I need to listen to the podcast. I don't want to make you rehash the whole
thing. I went to drama
thing.
School in England, and then I was working. I had worked in London.
I'm talking to Lauren Lapkus, star of the Netflix original film, The Wrong Missy. She plays the title character in that movie, which at one point this year was the most popular thing on Netflix in the whole world. If you don't know her from that, you probably know her from a dozen other things. Jurassic World, Orange is the New Black, Comedy Bang Bang, The Big Bang Theory, her many podcasts, and on and on and on. There are several reasons that I wanted to talk to Lauren, but one of the main ones is this. A few years back, she cast me in a small role that, unbeknownst to her, caused me to reevaluate my career path and fully commit to being a professional actor again, 15 years after being fired from Band of Brothers. The role was a non-speaking part with a memorable name, Pathetic Man.
I actually think dead eyes were a key part of the role.
This is Dead Eyes, a podcast about one actor's quest to find out why Tom Hanks fired him from a small role in the 2001 HBO miniseries Band of Brothers.
I'm Connor Ratliff. I'm an actor and comedian. 20 years ago, I was fired by Tom Hanks. I was told the reason was that he saw my audition tape and he thought I had dead eyes.
Your eyes look very alive, I would like to say.
Well, I'm popping them the whole time. I really try to make an effort now, you know? I won't get caught again. I won't get caught with dead eyes again.
Okay, so let's look at the timeline. I get fired from Band of Brothers in June of 2000. And my next professional acting gig isn't until April 2013. That's a big gap. I was not really looking to get back into show business again. It's just something I sort of fell back into after performing comedy at UCB for a while. I did a couple of TV commercials and a few small roles here and there on TV shows and little indie projects. And I was lucky. Every now and then, something would just sort of fall into my lap. In July of 2015, I got an email from a casting director asking if I was available for a role with no lines in an episode of a new sketch comedy program on Netflix called The Characters. This was a series that basically provided one-off showcase episodes for a bunch of really amazing comedy people, people like Natasha Rothwell, Tim Robinson, John Early, and I was being offered a part in the Lauren Lapkus episode.
And your character definitely had dead eyes.
Yeah, so I play a dead-eyed stripper named Bamanda in that scene, and I'm dancing to Brick by Ben Folds 5. And you are one of the men, one of the patrons of the strip club. I cast you as Pathetic Man, and then I like grind on you basically and like hump the air around you in the sketch, which is available to view on Netflix if anyone wants to see it. But yeah, you're a Pathetic Man.
I think I got an email that was a direct offer. It was, I didn't have to audition for it.
No.
But it was specifically, this is a non-speaking role. You don't say anything, but it does involve acting. Like, it's a featured, they're like, it's a good part.
You were cast because you're so funny. It wasn't just like a background role or something. Like, I needed somebody who would be able to be very funny in this moment while being a straight man to the crazy character, but also bringing your own funniness to it. And you did.
Right.
But you didn't have any lines, unfortunately.
There's a first part where you see the character where your character is doing voiceover over my
character. It's like a commercial.
Sort of. Yeah.
I'm a pathetic loser. I'm dying to get out of the town and get drunk while wasting a ton of my mommy's money. But how? Oh, yeah. Let's get you and your whole miserable pack of dateless dry dicks, assuming you have any friends, to Dick and Boner. It's the number one hotspot in town where bros can be bros and hoes can be hoes. Get your lame ass in here and get your little dick.
And the voiceover gets like meaner and meaner basically about you. And we see you in the strip club.
I think you see me in the commercial first and then you see me at the strip club later.
That makes sense.
It was very weird. I think the first day of shooting was the strip club that I had. The first day of shooting for me. I've never been in a strip club before, and it was very weird to be in one in that circumstance.
Yeah, that's probably the weirdest way to go to a strip club. Like, you're seeing sort of the behind the scenes.
Yeah, because sometimes it was like the lighting, like it's dark in there, but every now and then there'd be like regular, like work lights.
Yes.
And so you kind of see that it's just an ordinary room. Like, you're never supposed to see the carpet like this.
Seeing a strip club like lit up like a regular room is creepy.
Yeah. Now, I had an experience on that show that I don't think you'll be aware of.
Oh, God.
I didn't have a manager. I think I had a commercial agent, but no, like, regular agent at that point. I was kind of avoiding that kind of thing. Any opportunity that came my way, I was excited about it, and I was very excited to be involved in this. But one thing I didn't realize was that because I didn't have lines...
Oh, God, what are you going to tell me? You got paid a dollar?
The money was fine, but it was actually, it was a weird thing where on the call sheet, like there were several people that I knew who were also there that day, but they were all listed as the actors. I was listed down with the background and I was just listed as,
oh, no.
As Pathetic Man. So unless people already knew me, there were people who would just call me Pathetic Man. So all day long, they'd be like, Pathetic Man. And that wasn't everybody because there were people who knew me.
That's not fair, because there were a lot of UCB people in the thing. So, like, on the same day as you, you knew a lot of the other people who were there.
Yeah, Sean Diston was there and Anthony Atamanik.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don Finelli. But then, so the crew.
Yeah, if a person on the crew needed me to go somewhere, they didn't have, like, access to my name. So they would just be like, we need Pathetic Man. And I would just answer to it, you know?
That's hysterical. I'm really sorry.
But then there was the second day of shooting where it was the commercial stuff, and you weren't there for that. And I think that was filming somewhere
right.
in Greenpoint. And
oh God,
I went to the soundstage, and I followed the signs, and I saw where they were filming. And so I went to the area that I thought I was supposed to go to, and I'm waiting around, and I can't find anybody to, like, check in with. You know, I went and got a seltzer from Craft Services. I'm sitting there, and I'm waiting to see who I report to because the filming's already underway. And finally, I see somebody go up to wardrobe. And so I follow them up, and I'm like, yeah, I need to go to wardrobe. I'm here for the characters. And the wardrobe person looked at me like, what? And I said, I'm Pathetic Man. And she goes, what, because of your shoes? So I left, and I went back downstairs, and I thought, like, I don't understand what's happening.
Well, that was not your wardrobe. That was your regular clothes?
Yeah, it was just they were my shoes. So I said, I'm Pathetic Man, and her first response was, what, because of your shoes? And
cold, cold response.
They were, they're just all weather mocks.
I'm pathetic, man.
From Land's End.
I love those, like dock shoes, boat shoes.
Yeah, I don't like laces. They're not quite boat shoes. They just don't have laces. They're slip-ons. So I went downstairs and I'm like, I've just been insulted. I don't know where I'm supposed to go to. And I went into the office and I said, hey, I don't know who I'm supposed to talk to. Wardrobe has no idea what I'm doing here. I'm pathetic man in the characters. And I was then informed that I was at the wrong soundstage. And so I'd spent like a half an hour sort of like stewing around this area, eating from the craft services, being insulted by the wardrobe people.
It's so funny to say I'm pathetic man to someone who has no idea what you're talking about. I mean, that's perfect.
Yeah. And, and then.
Hello?
Hi, I have a question. My name is Connor Ratliff and I'm an actor and,
just so you know, we did attempt to do some genuine investigative work on this.
I had filmed something there at about 5 years ago, and I was wondering...
I reached out to the location where the characters was filmed in an attempt to find out what production was using Stage B on August 13th, 2015.
Are you guys able to give out that kind of information? I was filming a...
The person I got in touch with didn't have access to the files that would contain that information because they are currently working remotely, because no one is shooting things on sound stages in New York City at the moment.
Yeah, I might have been in the office. I would have to go back into the records and see. I don't even know if I'm allowed to give out that information. Production companies, you know what I'm saying?
It's not easy being a comedian journalist.
And I think because of that, and this isn't something, I don't want this to feel like a gotcha interview, because I had such a good time doing our scene, and I love the way it turned out.
I'm loving this behind the scenes.
But then I think in the end, I'm credited, because I was background, I'm credited in the special thanks.
Okay.
But then they spell my name wrong.
No!
And so then I got approached shortly after that by the person who's now my manager, and they were like, are you interested in having a manager? I said, yeah, I think I probably should have a manager.
That's so funny. I'm so sorry your name is spelled wrong. That's like a pet peeve of mine, so that really bothers me. Ugh.
I actually like it I love every detail of my pathetic man experience, because it felt like it was like a Daniel Day-Lewis level of immersion that was imposed upon me. It wasn't like I didn't go live in the woods to do this. I didn't volunteer to be pathetic man, but like the circumstances of it, at every phase, I was pathetic man.
That's so good.
I think that scene is one of my favorite scenes on my reel, because it's just face acting.
You're so funny in it. Like, I mean, you were fantastic. I wish you didn't have to be considered background. I should have given you, I didn't understand that at the time. I could have given you a line of like, thanks or something, and then maybe that would have bumped you.
Well, you were also playing so many different characters and running the whole thing, and it was very like, you had a lot going on.
And I think looking back at it now, there are so many things I would do differently, but I only know that from the experience of doing it, so I wouldn't have been able to do it differently.
I was trying to figure out if you had any connection to Tom Hanks.
Uh-huh.
I didn't find one.
I know Colin Hanks.
That's one.
From doing podcasts and stuff. So I know him.
Right. But you worked for Steven Spielberg.
I did.
The other big name doesn't really get mentioned as often on this podcast, because obviously my focus is more towards Tom Hanks. But Steven Spielberg was the other big name that, when I was auditioning for Band of Brothers, those were the names I was hearing people talk about, Tom and Steven. And Steven's people are here and Tom's people are here.
Mm-hmm.
But you were in Jurassic World.
Yes, I was.
Now! Paddock 11, this is control. You need to evacuate the container. It's in the cage. It's in there with you.
Go!
My perception is that franchise has reached the point where, like, Spielberg still is a part of it, but he's not. It's sort of like... he's not as actively involved in it as he was maybe during the original trilogy.
Yeah, I've never met him, and he was not present when I was there. But I was only there for, you know, a short window of the entire shooting for the movie, so I don't know if he was there.
It's also cool to know that, like, you know that at one point he just watched the movie.
Totally. Just to be like, oh, he's seen it. Like, he knows who I am, at least.
He's probably laughed at something that you did.
Yes. Whether he would remember it or not, that did happen in the moment.
Dead Eyes will be right back. In the 2004 Steven Spielberg film, The Terminal, Tom Hanks plays Victor Navorsky, a man who is forced to live in JFK Airport when there's a coup in the fictional Eastern European country of Krakosia, his homeland. The government is overthrown, so Victor is stuck living in the airport. It's a situation where finding the right mattress simply isn't an option. One of the most memorable images from the film is Victor sprawled out awkwardly over several interconnected, deeply uncomfortable-looking airport chairs. At the moment, I'm actually headed towards JFK Airport, not to live there, but to return a rental car that I'm driving from Jefferson City, Missouri, back to New York City. Fortunately, for those of us who don't have to live at the airport, finding the right mattress is easy now. Helix Sleep has a quiz you can take online. It's really quick. It takes about 2 minutes. And they can tell you exactly which mattress is right for your body type and sleep preference. Everybody's different, and Helix knows that. So they have several different kinds of mattresses to choose from. They have soft, medium, and firm mattresses, mattresses to cool you down if you sleep hot, and even a Helix Plus mattress for plus-size folks. I took the Helix quiz, and I was matched with the Midnight Lux mattress because I wanted something that would accommodate tossing and turning. It was neither too soft nor too firm. So if you're looking for a mattress, you take the quiz, you order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to a mattress store again, which is especially great right now. I've passed a few of them on the highway. I have to say, I can't imagine going to shop for mattresses at a mattress store in the middle of a pandemic. Seems like there's got to be a better way, right? And there is. My mattress is currently on its way, as am I. We're both going to meet up in New York, but I'm confident I'm going to like it based on its reputation. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ and Wired Magazine. Just go to helixsleep.com/deadeyes, take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but you will. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/deadeyes. That's up to $200 off all mattress orders plus 2 free pillows at helixsleep.com/deadeyes. Have you seen the Spielberg film, The Post? Tom Hanks plays legendary Washington Post editor Ben Bradley. It's sort of a prequel to All the President's Men, where the same guy was played by Jason Robards. Both of those films are essentially about professional journalists who are really good at what they do, and it makes me wonder, where would I go to find out how to do that? This episode is sponsored by Skillshare, an online community where millions come together to take the next step in their creative journey. There are thousands of classes available on topics including illustration, design, photography, video, freelancing, and more, including journalism. Skillshare offers a whole range of different classes in that realm, from the basics of news writing, how to improve your interview techniques, and how to pitch and get your work published in major publications as a freelancer. There are so many different kinds of classes to choose from, I bet it would not take you long to find something you're interested in. One of the classes I'm looking at right now is a masterclass by bestselling author Roxane Gay. The class is called Creative Writing, Crafting Personal Essays with Impact. Very helpful advice for anyone who wants to take their own story, their own experience, and craft it into something that speaks to people in a way they might find interesting. Skillshare is also really affordable. If you get an annual subscription, it's less than $10 a month. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/deadeyes, and the first 1,000 people to use our link will get a free trial of Skillshare Premium Membership. It's a free trial of Skillshare Premium Membership for the first 1,000 people to use our link. Skillshare.com/deadeyes. Lauren and I actually share another IMDb credit, albeit several years apart. I think the first time I ever saw her in anything was when she played the role of Litchfield Penitentiary Corrections Officer Susan Fisher in Orange is the New Black.
I like talking to him. It's nice chatting with someone who gets what you do all day, you know? Like work stuff.
She was in seasons 1 and 2, and I was aware at the time that she was also a UCB performer and that we had a couple of mutual friends in common, Laura Wilcox and Don Finelli, both of whom have small speaking roles in her episode of The Characters. Don and I have been on multiple improv teams together in New York City, and both of us would also eventually turn up on Orange is the New Black.
What is your role on that?
I play a lawyer in the next to last season of the show. I'm Black Cindy's attorney.
Sorry, I know I'm late, but I have a good reason. I want a trial.
Congratulations.
I know I shouldn't brag, but I'm just so shocked. I thought for sure this guy was going down for at least 15. You should have seen this age.
Now, your character was written out in season 2. You're one of the prison guards.
Yes.
How did you find out that you were being written out of the show?
At the time of doing the show, I was considered local hire, which meant that I was flying, like paying my own way to fly out and do the show. They don't put you in a hotel or give you a plane ticket because most of the actors were in New York. And I was thrilled to do it, very similarly to your experience of, I'll just do whatever anyone says. Like, yeah. And I was staying on Laura Wilcox's floor. Laura Wilcox and Don Finelli were friends, men from New York, you know, obviously. And I was staying on their air mattress, which would deflate throughout the night, every night. It was a time. And I remember sitting there reading this. I got the script sent to me for the next episode. And I searched my name first, my character name.
So you can find your lines. Yeah.
And the scene is, you're fired. And then I go, wait, what? Like, the lines are like, you're fired. And I'm like, what? And, blah, blah, blah. And then I kind of like, I jumped ahead. I'm like, there. Then he goes like, no, you're not. Like, you know, like I thought there was like going to be like some sort of, this isn't actually being fired. He's just, you're having a fight, whatever. And no, that's all it was, is you're fired. And I get kicked off the show. So I was really stunned. And I flew back and did that final episode. And it was pretty emotional for me personally, because I just had no idea it was coming. I felt like my character had been kind of getting set up for something bigger, because in a previous episode, I explained that I'm the only one who knows Spanish, the only CO who can speak Spanish, and I'm translating some of the phone calls from the inmates, and I hear like a juicy sort of bit of gossip about one of the inmates being pregnant. Like, there's like a whole thing that happens. So I was really surprised that my character was just unceremoniously fired from the show.
I remember that feeling of like, you're supposed to be shocked and it feels like a shock, but it's interesting that you found out in fiction, you know, like it was the fictional firing that tipped you off to your actual firing.
Yes, it was. I was like, oh, guess I'll never be on the show. Like, okay. Like, it was just a shock. At that time, I had never been like recurring on things where your character could be written out. But it made me think of like the Friends episode where Joey is written off the soap opera and he's supposed to like walk into the elevator shaft and die or whatever. He just like won't do it.
Yeah.
I was just thinking like, wow, this is how some people, this is true. You just find out by reading the script.
When I auditioned for Orange is the New Black, I think this is maybe one of my best casting experiences, because the character that I was auditioning for is named Reuben Siegel. And in the description, he's described as a completely bald Jewish lawyer. I knew I wanted to be on Orange is the New Black. It was like, it's a show that I knew was like, I'm in New York, it films in New York, and there's lots of parts.
Totally.
And so I get this character sides, and I'm like, well, they're not going to cast me as this part because it's New York City, and if they can't find a character actor who's already bald and seems Jewish more than me, then they're not looking hard enough. Like, there's plenty of people who could play this part. I'm not right for it, but I want to put myself on tapes just so they can see me, so I'll be in their minds, so when something else pops up, they know me.
Yes.
I was doing the Chris Gethard show, which taped live in New York at the time. And one of the casting associates was at the taping of the Gethard show that, like, Thursday night. And I had put myself on tape on Tuesday, I think. And she comes up to me and she said, hey, you're in the mix for Orange is the New Black. And I was like, yeah. I said, you're not going to cast me as that. I'm not right for it. And she said, what? I said, I'm completely wrong for the part. I hope you guys keep me in mind for something else. But But I know that I'm not going to get this one. She's like, no, you are in the mix for it. I'm like, yeah, I don't believe I am. And I don't believe I should be. And I was really like, I was finding it funny. I was sort of.
You're like basically convincing her.
I basically was telling them there's no way you'll cast me. And the next day I got the part.
Oh my God.
It might be a coincidence. It might just be that I was in the mix and that's how it went. But I always feel like I talked myself into that part by telling them not to cast me.
Yeah.
On an emotional level, it definitely feels like I feel like they went back and were like, we have to cast him. Why? He said he dared us to.
He said he's completely wrong.
And then I was like, kind of worried because I'm like, do they want me to shave my head? Like, I'm going to look terrible with a shaved head. I have a weird shaped skull. I was in a car wreck as a baby, and I'm convinced that if
really?
I ever. Yeah. I'm old enough that like car seats were not quite a thing yet when I was a newborn baby. And so I was like on my mom's lap, and these old women ran a stop sign, and I like went headfirst into the windshield and like broke the windshield with my baby head.
Oh my God.
And I always, when I feel my skull, I'm like, yeah, there's like a little patio area on my skull that it's going to like, if I ever go fully bald, I'll only be castable as like monsters. And so I was like, are they going to make me shave my head? And my manager was like, no, they haven't said anything about it. And then I show up for the first day of filming and I'm like, the script said, I have a line where I say, my hair vanished sometime in my mid-20s. Like the line of dialogue was.
Whoa.
And the hair and makeup people were like, they haven't told us anything about you being completely bald. So they kind of tried to emphasize my hairline being receding.
So they kind of gave you like a comb over.
Yeah, they sort of slicked it back. I was the only one who was worried about it. I changed my line of dialogue. I think I said something like, it started vanishing in my mid-20s.
Uh-huh.
So I like changed the line on the first take, and then the director was like, that's a good change. And I'm like, no one else seems worried about the fact that they've cast someone who's not completely bald.
I love that you changed it. Good for you.
I remember hearing from Laura and Don before I knew you that you were sleeping on an air mattress. And they were specifically saying that like Netflix shows don't pay tremendously well. That was my first learning of like the era of like streaming shows being different than network, being different than cable.
Well, it was like the first, like it was one of the first shows along with what's it called?
House of Cards, Lilyhammer.
House of Cards is what I was looking for.
Yeah.
But at the time, like, they hadn't even aired that yet, so we didn't even know what it was. And, yeah, I mean, the pay was very low. And so it was like, if I'm going to fly myself out and put myself in a hotel, then I don't get paid.
And that's still true that, like, you'll see someone in a movie and you'll realize, like, oh, they got a day rate for that role.
It's so disheartening, honestly, to, like, learn that kind of stuff, because then when you watch things, you have a totally different perspective on, like, what the whole, like, you're looking at, like, the business and not really, like, the movie anymore. Like, suddenly it's like, oh yeah, he got $800 or
One thing that's been ruined for me in show business is anytime a character walks into a room and hands someone a file and says nothing,
yeah,
I'm like, oh, they didn't want to pay that guy. Because like in my life, the number of times that anyone I've ever witnessed someone walk into a room and hand someone a file and walk away silently, it would be creepy in real life.
I love those moments, like when, like, I just watched something the other day. I can't remember what it was, but this woman comes out of a store. She comes up to a store and she's like, wasn't there another store here before? It used to be a sandwich shop. And she's like asking this woman, and the woman just like shrugging, like, It doesn't make any noise, but kind of like makes a lot of faces, like, how would I know? Why would I know that? I don't know that. And then like walks away. And it's like, anybody would say, I don't know.
Right.
Oh, maybe it used to. You'd say something, but it was like, that's a background actor. They don't want to pay them and bump them up.
Anyone who's that deliberately silent is so fascinating that the show should really be about them. Why didn't that person say anything?
Yeah. That person walks around like,
Yeah. It's also ruined the whole idea of under fives, meaning that if you have five lines or under, it's a certain rate.
Yeah.
I've done things where I like talk quite a bit five times.
Right.
And it's just like, we can't go over this or it'll make it something else.
No, and I think these, like, the kind of terms, like the titles for those roles are confusing when you're first starting, because a co-star role is two lines. Co-star.
Yeah.
a guest role is more lines and you might be part of the plot or something. But then, like, if you say, like, I'm co-starring on this thing, it's like, well, you have two lines. It's not you're a star of the show. That's like a... It's, so these words are so confusing and they kind of make it sound better or cooler than it is, I think.
I'm still confused by that because when I hear the word co-star, I'm like, oh, that's like you're the second lead of the thing.
Right. And they also do use it for, like, real leads. Like, they're co-starring in this show together, those two actors. But then, like, you would say... I booked a co-star role, which is two lines.
It's interesting how when you'll sometimes work on like a big movie or a TV show that feels very professional, but you're getting like as little as they can pay you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a bad amount, but it is like, then you'll do something else. Like there are people that I find out that their Patreon for their podcast is making them so much more money than like the TV show that they're on.
Right, right.
Have there ever been times other than getting fired narratively in Orange is the New Black, because that doesn't feel personal in the sense that it's like it's where the story is going, it's where the...
Right.
Have you ever been fired from an acting job for any other kind of reason?
Yes. One time I was recast in a pilot. I sort of did it as a sort of a favor in the sense that I got paid very little and it was kind of like a low budget situation. But it was with somebody that I admired, and I was excited to work with this person. And it wasn't like a sitcom, but it was, you know, it was like a TV show of some sort. And honestly, I felt that I wasn't the best fit for it. I felt that it wasn't, you get that feeling where it's like, oh, this isn't really my wheelhouse as much as everyone thought it would be. Like, this thing is not exactly what I like to do.
Right.
And the pilot went fine, but ultimately I was like, I'm pretty glad that is over, and I don't think this will get picked up. But then it did get picked up, and I was informed that... So I got it. My agent told me they're recasting everyone except for this main celebrity. And I go, well, I was like the only other person in it. So you just mean me? They're recasting me. And then she was like, yeah. So I was like, okay, you don't have to like cushion it by saying they're recasting everyone, because that just is me. Then I saw it on TV. I did check in on it. Also, the celebrity person was very kind and called me to let me know that that had happened and that it was no hard feeling. I appreciated it, but, you know, it still feels shitty.
Yeah.
And then they recast me with a girl who is basically me, but, like, not, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like a comedian, blondish, younger girl who's, like, a stand-up. And I was like, okay, yeah, but, like... It's very weird to watch something that you shot the entire... I shot the entire pilot. Then I watched the first episode, and it's basically all the same jokes, but someone else is saying them. And I was like, okay, yep.
Yeah.
Very weird.
When I was in high school and in the summertime, I'd do like temp jobs or things like that. I worked at a temp agency once, and it was a bad job, didn't pay much, but everyone made a big deal of like being super friendly, and they were always like, hey, we're going to go on a picnic this weekend. We're going to go to the... They were all just trying to do social things. And I was really annoyed by, like, this. I didn't come here for friendship. I have my own friends.
Yes.
I didn't like the fake friendliness that everyone, like, made a big deal out of when it was your last... Like, it really bothered me. And then I found myself in a city working for a temp agency where they were very upfront about the fact they didn't care about you. They didn't care if you were there. And I found myself longing for the lie. I was like, well, at least that other place pretended to care. Even if they didn't pay any better, they weren't actually any better. I'm like, they were making an effort to try to be nicer, even if it's fake.
Yeah.
And it's like, I do appreciate like the little euphemisms like character actor. Like that's a very... Uh-huh. You're a character actor. It's a very kind thing that people say to a person, because it's a stand-in for other things that, you know, like I was in a commercial once where I think it was literally like the part was like undesirable husband.
Just if that were on your IMDb next to pathetic man, yeah. I mean, I think that would look really nice.
because pathetic man, at least that's the point of the character. It's very important that pathetic man.
Right. It's
pathetic.
A joke. It's extremely heightened.
Yes.
Yes.
Undesirable husband. He was just a husband. You didn't need
to. They know what they're looking for. They don't have to tell you that part. Like, just be like, husband.
Yeah, that should be a secret for them.
Yeah, husband. And we know what types we're looking for.
Make sure not to cast someone who's, like, super attractive in this part.
It's not a model.
Yeah. I once auditioned for The Nick, you know, that show?
Uh-huh.
And it was for unattractive realtor. And all he did was sell him an apartment. It literally was, like, two lines. And there was no reason to call him unattractive. He's just a realtor.
No, that there are some mean descriptions out there that people just like go for it. It's as if they think you're not going to see that part of the thing. Like, but that's all you receive is the breakdown of the character and how it's described and then any information like that. And I mean, it's anything like that that you, whenever I don't get a part and I get very close to it, it's almost a similar thing like, it's close to being fired because when you like test for something and you're like, you go through many rounds of auditions, you're down to the final three, you see the competition and then they don't choose you. It's a pretty hurtful rejection. But because usually in auditions, you have no idea how many people they saw and you can kind of just be like, there were 100 people. What are the odds? And like move on.
Yeah.
But when it's like you see everyone, it feels worse. And I think watching the thing and seeing who got it instead is one of the like craziest parts of this business. Because sometimes it'll be like a man got my role. And so it's like, well, then I really don't even know what they were looking for. Maybe that was just maybe they auditioned 1,000 people, or maybe they always knew it would be him and they threw me in there randomly. Or if it's someone who looks exactly like me, then I'm like, well, then what did I do wrong? Like, it's a very weird, it fucks with your head.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not good to know. This is not good information. Like, acting is such a fucked up business. Do you feel that this has sent you down a deeper spiral with it, or are you getting more like, okay with it?
This starts from me knowing too much.
Right.
The person who told me over the phone, he thinks you have dead eyes. I never should have known that. However,
you never should have known that.
So in a micro sense, in that specific circumstance, it was not better to know. In a larger sense, I actually find it quite comforting to know that everybody goes through some element of this and everybody feels this way. It makes me less insecure to know that everybody is insecure.
Totally. And hearing just the trailer for your podcast, I was like cackling in my car because no one should have ever said the words dead eyes to you. Just act like you don't know that when you're talking to the person. That's so... How did you react when that was first said?
Blind panic.
Did you
just
feel it?
Just absolute panic. I picked up the phone. My agent had been trying to get a hold of me all weekend. And they were like, you have to go to London right away. And I was like, no, I'm going later this afternoon. They're like, no, you need to hear this. And I remember telling people, like, I have to go to London, I have to go, you know, and this is what's happening.
It's way too
and
much. It's crazy.
I just couldn't. It was too much.
But you and I would have talked on the phone.
We'd have had a phone relationship, definitely, because I was the frontline phone person. I was the first line of defense.
On the next episode of Dead Eyes, we'll talk to Robert Stiles, the person who gave me the bad news back in 2000, along with Hillary Gagan, my agent at the time.
But well, I was very honest when I replied to your email about the fact that you've never been off my mind because I'm still so angry about that situation.
Two voices I haven't heard in 20 years.
There was nothing more terrifying and awful than knowing that you had to phone somebody up and give them the worst news possible. It must... I mean, we all felt so terrible.
Thank you.
Dead Eyes is a production of HeadGum Studios. It was created by me, Connor Ratliff. It's written by me, and it's mostly me that you hear talking, including now. The show is produced and edited by Harry Nelson and Mike Comite. Special thanks to my guest, Lauren Lapkus. And thanks to Amy Mann for letting us use the song that's playing in the background. It's called Real Bad News from her classic 2002 album, Lost in Space. If you like Dead Eyes, please do all the things that podcasts ask you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us on Twitter at Dead Eyes Podcast, and talk about us nicely on social media. If you want to reach out, the email address is deadeyespodcast@gmail.com. Please tell your friends about this show, especially if you are friends with Tom Hanks, whose appearance in the 2016 documentary California Typewriter is probably one of the most delightful things I've seen all year long. It's a film about typewriters and the people who love them. Even though Tom Hanks is only in the film for a few minutes, his enthusiasm for the subject is so infectious that it stays with you throughout the movie. The film gets its title from a shop in Berkeley that at the time of filming was struggling to remain open. Finally closed this year in March. Unrelated to the pandemic, just the result of declining sales and the owner of the shop's retirement plans. Which makes some parts of the film a little bit sadder, seeing the effort they're making to keep the shop going in the face of a culture that is changing. But that brings me back to Tom Hanks, who knows that typewriters are a relic of an era that has passed but still sees the value and the beauty in celebrating what it means to type a letter on a physical typewriter today. I just typed one myself. Gonna send it off. You can find the movie currently on the Criterion Channel and also for free on IMDb TV. See you next time. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
Was a HeadGum original.